Episode 67 on the Real Kipper at Noon show. Welcome, everybody. I'm Nick Kiprio, soon to be joined with Doug McLean. Interesting thumbnail today. Are we officially into a week into this season yet? No. Still one day away. But with some teams off to a little bit of a slow start, it kind of created our thumbnail today. And that is using the P word on a few teams. Panic. Is there panic? Do we look at that North Division, that Canadian division right now, and see at least from a percentage point, Vancouver and Edmonton at the very bottom? And while we would never look twice at a start in a week in other regular seasons, this isn't a regular season. This is compressed 56 games. And I think to a certain degree, I still believe that it's not if you lose, it's how you lose. And I think there might be some concern in Edmonton and Vancouver. You start listening to comments, and we are in that social world, and you guys sit there and you share thoughts and ideas every day amongst, if not millions, hundreds of thousands, all over the world. What's wrong with Edmonton? What's wrong with Vancouver? So let's dive in a little bit of that and bring in Doug McLean, comfortably in 80-degree weather every day. No issues with Doug McLean.
What's a thumbnail?
Doug, you
what
wake
do you mean
up,
by it? What's a thumbnail?
A thumbnail is the what we lead the show with. So if you go on the internet, you see... today's thumbnail, we got a picture of Pettersson and too early to panic, question mark.
Yeah.
So while I'm sure in both respective cities, as far as their management is concerned, and you've been through this, I'm sure on a few occasions with bad starts, you're going to wake up this morning. Okay, you wake up, you're stress-free. We know that in Florida. But Jim Benning and Ken Holland wake up, and panic, question mark, or just concern?
Well, there's definitely going to be concern. And, you know, depending which team you're looking at, to me, they're both a little bit different. You know, one went to a conference final. One has been stumbling for a few years. So a little more panic in Edmonton, maybe.
When it comes to, Mac, the evolution of star players in this league, okay, in my era, before you really had a chance to ask for big money, you were probably in the vicinity of 28 to 32 before you really saw big money and then felt the pressure and the expectations to carry it. Today, 2021, much different now. We've got 21, 22-year-olds asking for the most money and then instantly becoming the go-to guys. And perfect examples of that, Connor McDavid, and of course, we just mentioned Pettersson in Vancouver. And I wake up this morning, and they're both 1-3. There are some issues, whether it's specialty teams or whether or not the goaltending's good enough. But there's no question when I read Pettersson saying today that he's lost his confidence, or at least he's not, quote, playing with it. As a management team, is that concerning to you?
Well, you know what? It depends on the individual, and I think with a guy like Pettersson, who's had, you know, a pretty spectacular young career so far, and went to a whole nother level last year, you've got to believe that he's going to get back to it. It bothered me, you know. I liked his commentary post game last night. You know, I took a couple bad penalties. I let the team down. I think he's still a kid, and I think he finds his way. I'm not as concerned about Vancouver. I think he and Hughes, look, more attention. You go in to play the Vancouver Canucks right now, and all you talk about in the Canadian North Division is how do we shut down Pettersson? How do we contain Hughes? It goes to another level when you become a star. So, yeah, you get the money, and he's waiting to get the money, and he's going to get a boatload, he hopes. Does that add pressure to the situation? Probably. But I think Pettersson and company will come out of this. I really do. I like their team a lot right now. I know they've lost Tanev. I know they lost Markstrom, but I like their team.
But then there's the fan base, Mac, who you can understand how a player evolves, and sometimes you got to be patient and you got to let nature take its course in terms of development. But we are talking about a compressed 56 game season where you can't have a bad 2 weeks. 2 weeks, Mac, a bad 2 weeks will ensure that you're on the outside looking in when this 56 game season is over.
Look, we used to think if you're not in the playoffs by Thanksgiving, if you're not in the playoffs by U.S. Thanksgiving, there's very little chance you're making the playoffs. Maybe one team, maybe two at the most in a conference gets in. Now we're looking at not quite 30 less games. So when do you, is it game 15? If you're not in the playoffs by game 15, is it game 12? You could be in some trouble. The great thing is you're playing these teams 8, 9, 10 times each. That can help, I guess, but it can also hurt. So look, there's no time to waste here. You're right on. You've got to be ready to go here. And, you know, it's like Montreal and these teams getting off to the quick start. All of a sudden, you're feeling pretty good, especially when you're on the road.
Another tough loss for the Edmonton Oilers. 3-1, their bread and butter, Mac, that power play. If I told you that they would have had 7 chances last night on the power play before the game, where would you have put the odds that they lose to the Montreal Canadiens?
Well, if you would have told me that last year and told me Montreal were going to play with their backup last year, and they played their backup last night, who now is a different backup and was a star last night, I would be surprised. This is a power play that was lethal last year, the best in the NHL. I thought adding Barry, I didn't like him as a 5-on-5 guy, as a defender, but you like him as a power play guy. But the power play has really let them down. And there's a lot of things letting Edmonton down. I'm saying Vancouver, I'm not panicking. In Edmonton, I'm close to a panic right now.
And if you're close to a panic, I watch Connor McDavid, Mac, and, you know, we've talked all week about how he has to be the best player on the planet or they don't win. It's that simple. And I just wonder about the level of his frustration. And Pettersson hasn't been in the league for 6 years, and he has not had to endure what Connor McDavid has in Edmonton. And want to talk about managing expectations? Where is he when it comes to managing the expectations after 6 years? Like, Connor McDavid woke up this morning the most frustrated hockey player in the league, bar none. I have no reservations about saying that for one reason, okay? He knows great players lead, and he can't do that right now in Edmonton.
But the leaders also, I'm looking at Dave Tippett, okay, last night. He takes out Jones and Bear out of his lineup. Basically, two top four guys he takes out. He puts in Chris Russell, a great veteran, but a veteran that's, a number six guy now. And he puts in another young player. He's starting to sound like Dallas Eakins did. He's starting to sound like Todd McClellan did. And you know what? The last couple of games, listen to Tippett post game. It's like, whoa, he is sour. This is game two, three, and on where he is. And if you're Connor, like you said, you're sitting there and you're listening to Tippett. You're looking at guys coming out of the lineup. You're looking at big changes. You're looking at a team that, where is this headed? You look at a struggling power play. You look at struggling goaltending, struggling blue line. A team that can't defend that. If I'm Connor McDavid, yeah, I'm nervous, as would Kenny Holland be and Tippett. They didn't expect this, I don't think.
We've known Kenny Holland for a very long time, and there's no question that he had built up a hell of a reputation coming out of Detroit all those years, making the playoffs and having a core group of guys, Mac, that help you, no different than Glenn Sather in Edmonton, carry a reputation that puts you amongst some of the very best in the history of our game, right? Yep. But Ken Holland now comes into Edmonton and inherits a lot of issues that were left by Peter Chiarelli. We know that, right? My only question is, now, in 2021, how patient can Ken Holland be? And I only say that because the biggest example that I have of maybe Ken Holland being too patient is the goaltending situation, right? Koskinen and Smith, and coming back to that. And I don't believe for 1 second that they should have had the same look that they finished with last season.
No, they shouldn't have. And it was the number one priority at the end of the season. And everybody talked about it. I mean, they had to add a few players, but they also had to fix their goaltending. And he tried to fix it with Markstrom. Didn't work. I don't know if he attempted to get Holtby, who was another top-end free agent that was available. I don't know if he inquired or looked there. But Ken did a great job in Detroit. I was with him when he was the chief scout. I was with him when he moved up in management. And the difference is no salary cap in Detroit when it was Yzerman and Fedorov and Shanahan and Hull and on and on and on. And he had an abundance of great young players that started with Lidstrom and Fedorov, his kids, and moved through with Lapointe and McCarty and that whole group. I'm thinking when Ken Holland gets Edmonton and he's got Connor McDavid and Draisaitl, I'm thinking, wow, how could you get a better job after leaving Detroit and 25 years in the playoffs, struggling at the end, and get the job in Edmonton? How good a job is that? I said the same when Peter Chiarelli got it. How lucky are they to get it with Connor McDavid? And now it's a franchise that's got some real questions. Real questions, and you hit it on the head. It starts in goal. It goes to the blue line with Klefbom out. Big loss. Larson being not anywhere close to what they thought they were getting when they traded Taylor Hall for him. And then it goes from there to the forward group, and there's a lot of holes up there, Nick. So
yeah, listen,
I'm nervous about this team right now.
I'm a huge believer that you win and you have success from the net on out.
Yeah.
And we can look at Connor. We can look at Leon Draisaitl. We can look at Nugent Hopkins and say really good players. But net out, Mac. So we just talked about the goaltending not changing. And then to a certain degree, you lose Klefbom, which when you get that money off the books and you know he's gone for a year, you telling me some way you couldn't have upped your money a little bit for Markstrom? I think if they just would have outbid Calgary a little bit here, they might end up looking a lot different with Markstrom right now.
Like it was out there that if Edmonton get Markstrom, they move into a contender. That's how quick it can change. Markstrom was the MVP in Vancouver the last 2 years. I know he only had two great years, but the goaltending is, I mean, look, we're hard on the two there because it hasn't been very pretty, you know, the last couple of years, but I'm with you.
Right.
I thought for sure he'd end up with Markstrom. I did.
I don't know how, and again, Tyson Barry comes in. They sign him to a one-year deal. Great. Perfect. Yeah. You can't ask for better term. But still, you commit almost $4 million to him. And I'm not sure that that was as wise as possibly giving it to someone else at a lesser extent. Or we spoke of, you know, Bouchard to at least start for the first 2 weeks instead of being on the taxi squad. And, you know, how much less would he be? He's supposed to come in, Mac, and be eventual quarterback. He's got a great shot. He's supposed to be a good skater. I mean, he has made strides in the last 12 months. He's played pretty well, you know, and maybe if you would have lost the 3.75 to Barry, maybe it would have freed up more of a decision for Markstrom or added a blue line guy. But that blue line, Mac, net and blue line is just, I'm sorry, Edmonton fans, it keeps you on the outside.
And this was the summer of deals. This was the summer of unbelievable deals. We just saw Hamonic sign in Vancouver. Yeah, he started off slow, but he and Hughes could end up being a very good pair. So the Hamonics were out there at little over $1 million and a few other guys. And the deals for forwards were out there to plug some holes with guys that signed cheap deals in $700,000 up to $1 million. You know, Hoffman signs in St. Louis for what, $4 million, and he's a 30-goal scorer. It was a tough summer for players, a time for general managers to capitalize on some deals. You see Boston pick up Craig Smith. Well, they got to hope he gets back to a 20-goal scorer because they need some scoring. But you know what? It's unfortunate because Connor McDavid is in year, what, Nick, six?
Six, Mac.
Year and, six, and he is not, I mean, he can be not easy to get along with at the best of times. Like, he's a hell of a kid. He's an unbelievable player, but he wants to win.
Mac,
he wants to win.
He's not, the biggest concern about the best player on the planet right now is I'm not sure how much he enjoys coming to the rink every day.
And this right? is a guy. Yeah, I know. And it's years of it. It's Dallas Eakins. It's Todd McClellan. It's Tippett. It's everybody's going to make us better. We're going to take the next step now. He's heard that for 6 years.
So if he wants
Kenny Holland comes in. If I'm McDavid and Kenny Holland comes in and he brings Tippett, I'm feeling really good about the future of the organization. And then boom, this happens. And it's only a few games in. But I just don't like what I'm seeing.
But
I hope it changes big time.
But if you're Connor and you see the tire spinning in the mud, Mac, how long do you want to stick around here?
Well, I mean, that's been out there for a couple of years, and it really ticks off everybody. And I'm certainly not going to say it that he's going to want out, but we're talking 6 years. We're talking 6 years of this for him. And then they get in the playoffs last year. They have a good finish to the year. They look like they've got it going really good. And then they lose to Chicago in the first round. I'm thinking, oh, my God. Now, look, they have had a little success in the playoffs early on. But this is supposed to be a lot better than this. A lot better than that.
Mac, we've been around the game a long time. And we appreciate that amazing skill level of a Connor McDavid, a Wayne Gretzky, a Mario Lemieux, but our game is built on four lines and three D and, you know, extra players, black aces to win championships. Okay. We know that. Yeah. When I watch Edmonton and I see the disconnect between two or three guys, and we know who they are, Dreisaitl and Nuge and
Connor,
and then the rest of the team. There is such a big disconnect, Mac, right? Oh. Like, it gets to the point where I'm watching the Oilers and
Nygaard
and you're on the bench and you're like, okay, Connor, go do your stuff. And it, you just can't play the game and win like that, Mac.
Well, the and focus.
Now you watch what should have been their bread and butter this season, and that's the power play now, go 0-for-7. So what do you do now? And this is the problem here with any team, and I'm not just saying Edmonton, okay, is that when you have the number one power play on the team or in the league, everything's hunky-dory. Mm-hmm. And your star players like Connor and Draisaitl, you want to take 140 of it, 150, sometimes the whole 2 minutes. Hey, yeah, roll with it. But once it starts going sour, when, and even with the best player in the planet, and I include Connor, of course, in this, is that when you go for seven and you still suck in, you know, 95% of the time on the power play, I mean, it is what it is. You're not going to change it, but yeah, you don't like it anymore. And that's what I mean with the disconnect. So if you're Tippett, what do you do now, Mac, on even a power play with Connor McDavid struggling? Do you continue to just throw him out there for the whole 2 minutes? Or do you find a way to get more people involved?
Well, you know, I mean, the problem is who's getting involved? Who else is there besides Nugent Hopkins and Draisaitl? Chiasson had a good run on the power play. He's on the fourth line on the wing last night. You know, you got, you know, Cassian. I mean, I think it goes back. I know the power play is one thing, and I know it's got to be important, but I look at their makeup of their lines, their 5-on-5 play. I mean, I mean, you can't give up the chances they give up 5-on-5. The power play, I think, will look after itself. I really do. I think they're talented enough that they will look after themselves. But I look at their 5-on-5. If you told Connor McDavid year one that his winger in year six would be Cassian, I mean, and he's the best they've been able to find to play with this guy. I mean, I just don't, I don't get it. I mean, Nugent Hopkins is a terrific guy on one side and Cassian on the other. I know he's a big, strong guy. I love him, but I like him on the third line. I don't like him on your top line with the best player in the world. Now, Sid had a lot of those guys with him and Sid made those guys better. Sid had a lot. We used to shake our head, Nick, at who was playing on Sid's wing, and he seemed to find a way. So it'll be interesting if Connor can find a way. I wouldn't count him out, but I just don't like the mix right now at forward or on defense, and definitely not in goal. And look, in fairness, if Klefbom was playing and playing 26 minutes, we might see a difference.
Okay, one more topic of discussion on the Edmonton Oilers, and we'll move on here.
Hey, Kipper, before you dive into that, I just want to everyone know that the Predators game was just postponed for this evening. One of our staff members actually manages the hotel that the Predators were staying at last night, so had that a couple minutes ago, but the NHL beat us to it. But yeah, it's been postponed. It's going to par for the course for this season, I guess.
Nashville and Carolina were on tap tonight at 8 p.m., so our first postponed game, Mac.
Other than Dallas and
that's right. Yeah. But I'm talking about in season those games were canceled, NFL, of course, before the season started.
The NFL made them play.
Yeah.
You know, they had to use extra players. So where is this gonna go if it gets, and we talked about this a week or so ago. What do they do if they run into a real problem here? And look, we talked about it, Nick. Guys staying in hotels 4 days in a row and not allowed to go anywhere. I don't know.
Well, Doug, what do they do? I mean, the NFL, I think they've gotten a pretty good deal here because they have time to reschedule. If it's a Monday game, hey, we'll play it Wednesday. What does the NHL do in this situation where they have set up?
They allowed an extra, what, Nick, a week or 10 days in the schedule?
I would say, Mac, without maybe publicly admitting it, they've got 2-3 weeks to kind of play with here.
Yeah. So they'll watch it as close. But look, it's not good news to say the least. But so, you know what? Is it too early to panic? For me, it's not too early in Edmonton. It's too early in Vancouver.
One last topic before we just got the news about Nashville and Carolina being canceled tonight, or at least postponed. we talked the other day, which got a pretty good response in terms of the Winnipeg Jets and Patrick Laine. We can go back and talk about the Leafs having $40 million in four forwards. We look at the Edmonton Oilers, Mac, and in the foreseeable future, can they compete now with Draisaitl, McDavid, Nugent Hopkins? And we know Nugent Hopkins is going into this season, the last year of his deal before he becomes a UFA. My understanding, Mac, was prior to the season, they might have thought they had a deal done on a new contract. And for whatever reason, I think it got shut down. And I get the impression that it hasn't been revisited. And I'm just wondering now, if you're Edmonton and you watch this slow start, we talked about Wheeler maybe moving out instead of Laine and then flipping Wheeler for some assets. Are you now at the point, if you're Ken Holland, to start thinking about not re-signing Nugent Hopkins and perhaps moving him for a defenseman?
Well,
or two?
Or a goaltender? I mean, that's a real issue, and I guarantee you Ken is throwing this around nonstop. I mean, how do you make it so it's going to work? We saw Toronto with their four guys at 40-plus million. It looked good last night. It hasn't looked good in the playoffs. How is it going to look this year in the playoffs? Is it a model to stay away from? It's a tough model for a GM to work under to improve your hockey team. You know, it's not going to get easier in Toronto. Edmonton have cap problems right now. They have cap problems right now. I mean, that's hard to believe. But you know what? Kenny's got to look at every option.
Would you re-sign Nugent Hopkins to, okay, he's coming off 6 years and $42 million off that contract they all signed when they were much younger. But would you look at signing him for anywhere between $45 and $50 million for the next 6 or 7 years, because that's what it's going to take? Would you do that today?
I think when you've got Draisaitl and McDavid that are going to be your number 1-2 guy, I'm not sure you can afford to have your number 3 guy at that kind of dollars with this team, unless he's a number 1 blue liner. Unless he's a number 1 blue liner. We know that Vancouver's going to have a number 1 blue liner. At least most people believe that in Hughes. Toronto have Morgan Riley. Maybe he's not a number 1, but he's a real damn good number 2. Championship teams have the number 1 blue liner. Klefbom, I don't see him as that. Edmonton need a number 1 defenseman. And where do you find them if you don't draft him? I know he's got the great young kid in Sweden, drafted in the first round last year. How good he can become will be interesting. People like him. So that's a tough call for Ken Holland. Tough call. You make a great point there.
It is. Well, thank you very much. I think that's the second compliment 2 days in a row you gave me. Wow. Let me just collect myself. 5-2 losers, the Vancouver Canucks.
You're always big on the money yes. and players. You know, it's always been a pet peeve of yours.
Yes.
Helping the players. You know, I like to see management get some help, and you like to see the players get
yes,
involved.
So that's right.
I'm surprised you're not saying they should give Nuge $9 million. But if they don't, you'll be saying, well, somebody else should give it to them.
Yeah. Vancouver Canucks, there didn't seem to be as much of a panic in social media after 20 minutes. They look good. Calgary looked flat, and they looked like they were well on their way. And then Markstrom shut the door and they got their act going back. As far as the Vancouver Canucks go, you're not as worried about them.
I'm not, because I really believe that Pettersson, Horvat, Miller, Besser, that group, you know, that group of 4 or 5 forwards is a pretty solid group. They got some good veterans there. They got some guys that can check up front. So I'm not nearly as concerned with that group of forwards. And then I go to their blue line and you say, okay, Hughes and Hamonic, you like it. You go Edler, you know, with Schmidt, you like it. Then you go Myers, you like Myers. You levy a kid, Ben. The thing is, does Holtby bounce back? Can Demko as a kid hold up? That's going to be the million-dollar question. If Edmonton beat out Vancouver, if Calgary beat out Vancouver for the last playoff spot, it's going to be Markstrom being better in goal than Holtby and Demko. That's what it's going to be. Because I think everywhere else, I think Vancouver's forward group is better than Calgary's. And I think their defense is as almost, I'd say, pretty well as good. It's going to come down to goaltending. And I think Holtby will battle. He's got a ton of character, but Markstrom is damn good. And he's showing it. And he's, you know, he's battled back. First night they lose to Winnipeg, they battle back with a couple of big wins. And their stars contribute. I've got to give this is where a coach becomes important. Lindholm moves to center ice with Tkachuk. That changed the look of this hockey team. Okay, then the numbers two line, Monahan, Goudreau, and Levo. It changed the look of that group up front. So I thought that was a great move by Ward. And so I right now, Edmonton is my place to panic. I feel okay about Vancouver and Calgary.
Okay, let's stay on the coaching theme in Vancouver. And we'll talk about Travis Green. So much positive coming out of the bubble and the way they were able to carry themselves and the momentum even going into this season, Mac.
Yeah.
And one of the first topic of conversations 48 hours after Vancouver was eliminated in the Hubs was Travis Green and getting him signed to a new contract.
Not done.
And now we are here today, and Travis Green has no contract, and it's my understanding that there isn't really much talk on it at all. I do believe, Mac, that they balked at his ask. My understanding was the going rate right now for a Travis Green is $3 million a year, and my understanding is they don't want to pay him $3 million a year. I wonder how much that has to do now with at least not carrying as much momentum in this season and kind of leaving Travis Green out there right now.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit what might be going on. Money's tight. We saw it with players. We saw what happened to the players in the pandemic situation with their contracts. We saw some guys take some unbelievable haircuts. We saw coaches like McClellan gets $5 million in LA and whatever he got, $3 or $4 million in Edmonton with no success. We saw a bunch of coaches get a ton of money and limited success in places. If you're an owner sitting there right now, and I guarantee you this is not Jimmy Benning. If you're an owner sitting there, you're losing millions of dollars, maybe in your business and also with your hockey team. And you're going to pay a coach $3, $4, $5 million. I'm telling you, players have taken a haircut. GMs will take a haircut and coaches will take a haircut. That's just my own feeling. And if you want to sign now, you may be better off. If I'm Travis, I'm waiting. Let the pandemic calm down. Let the fans be allowed back in the buildings and then start to negotiate. Travis is a good coach. I like him.
Mac, but
money's tight.
That's fine. But you also run the risk of Travis Green being a free agent and going anywhere he wants. Are you prepared? Are you prepared to have put the time and effort into Travis Green to watch him walk out the door come July?
Well, you know what? I would hope that it'll get done before July. And I think Travis likes the team a lot. He loves the group. He sees a long-term possibility there. He wants to be in Vancouver. I think if money loosens up, Travis would be better off waiting till the spring. But I'm telling you this, this is not a good time to be looking for a coaching job right now, Nick. I'm telling you, what owner is going to coach and suck up $3 or $4 million in a coach sitting on the sidelines? They're not going to do it, Nick.
Yeah.
It's going to be, I believe it's going to change. And it will come back.
Money. I agree with you. Money isn't out there. And,
not a good
usually
time
though, Mac, usually you don't see good coaches like that go into his last year, right? What's the usual policy when a coach is up against his last year to renew him at least for another year in an option, correct?
That is in the typical situation. It would have been done this summer and, you know, with an additional couple of years on it. At least one. You never want your coach to be a lame duck coach. Aquilini's a tough guy in Vancouver. Don't think this hasn't got his fingerprints all over it. This is not a Jim Benning decision. If Jim could sign Travis, I guarantee he'd get him done. But this is, and I don't know this. I'm just giving my opinion here. I think it's coming right from ownership. I'm sure they love Travis.
Without a doubt, Mac. Those decisions always come down.
Money's money. Money's money, and it's tough right now.
Yeah. Well, and think where Vancouver might be with a healthy Michael Ferland. And that money that he's going to make on what's left of his deal is real money. That there's no insurance on that one, Mac. And that stings.
It's a killer. And then you've got the Erickson situation that just won't go away with them, you know? But every team is up against the cap. We look at them all, with the exception of a very few teams. They don't have cap issues. And when money becomes even tighter like it is today, you know, you get some great prices. You get guys for 700. You get guys for $1 million. But it's tight.
Okay. We see the frustration out of Edmonton and Vancouver. We talk about power plays. Tremendous frustration there. And then you've got the Toronto Maple Leafs. Even when they're not scoring on the power play, Mac, they do send a message to the rest of the league. Don't take penalties against us.
No, I mean, their power play has been terrific. And Hellebuck talked about it post-game, about how good it looked and how tough it is to defend. You go into a game like last night, you're missing DeMello on the back end. You're missing Pullman on the back end. That power play is good even when you're full strength. And that's a tough power play to stop. They move. They skate. Matthews takes control. Tavares takes control. Nylander's looked better than I've seen. Although he had a great year last year, he looks terrific. Hyman battles. I mean, Morgan Rielly looks so confident right now. Brody, it's a good-looking power play. Big Joe makes good passes. He set up. Who was it last night? He set up beautiful setup in the slot last night. Toronto looked good last night. Full marks. Freddie Anderson, much maligned. Freddie Anderson made some big saves, especially on Scheifele. Lady made a couple big saves on Connors, but I like the Leafs. I liked them last night. They played a better style of hockey.
Well, and
not just run and gun. They defended in the third. They defended pretty well
in
the third.
Yeah, they did, Mac. And it just seems that that's more a typical playoff type of hockey where you get a lead and you keep it. Now, I didn't like the Kerfoot shift late in the second period. You're up 2-0,
yeah,
and then you send your quote unquote checking line with Kerfoot out there and Mihailov, I think, and they give up a Kyle Connor goal at 2-1 40 seconds later. That needs to get cleaned up at all. I'm not sure they're still set with Kerfoot playing that type of role.
I don't like him there, but look, the problem at playoff time is your top guys get so much attention. Your power play gets so much attention. Your third line becomes how important. We saw it in Tampa with Coleman. We saw it with the kid from San Jose. I mean, your third line becomes such an important line. I like that the coach is trying to fix the third line. You know, he's putting Mikhailov there. He puts Hyman there to help them out. I mean, I like the fact that he's trying to help that line, but I don't like Kerfoot as a number three centerman. And he's making $3.5 million a year. Like, I'm sorry. He's a good player, but he's not a third line checking type guy. I don't know where he fits, but hey, they look good last night.
Yeah.
Full marks to them.
You know? And Anderson looked real strong too.
Well,
and
he got a rest. I mean, game two, they had to give him a rest.
And with all due respect, I read the tea leaves and it's going right to Jack Campbell. And I don't know if it's going to get there by the end of this season, but you can't convince me otherwise that Frederik Andersen has long-term plans to be in Toronto.
Well, do you want Freddie Andersen being your number one goaltender in this year's playoffs in the first round without a contract?
He's got to be standing on his head for me to allow him to walk out the door like Markstrom just did in Vancouver. Okay?
Yeah.
So that can't happen. You can't let assets walk out the door for nothing anymore. No. And Lou Lamoriello, I give full credit to, okay, for so much.
Yeah.
I appreciate Lou Lamoriello more probably today than I ever have in my past. But think about where the Islanders would be if he would have moved Tavares when he needed to make that tough decision. So those days are over. Vancouver got burned bad. Toronto can't get burned.
Oh.
And again, say what you will, you know, analytics, naysayers who think that Frederik Andersen stinks around the playoffs and he doesn't have the mental capacity to win big games when it counts the most. That guy is going to get Markstrom type of money next year. Okay.
And he's that a good guy, goalie. That guy, I watched that guy for the last few years hold them in a ton of games when they were exchanging chances on a regular basis and giving up unbelievable quality chances. So, and the biggest question is, Jack Campbell's got to prove he can be a number one and win in the playoffs. And I'm telling you what, the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to go against Vancouver, Winnipeg, or Calgary, or Montreal in the first round.
Freddie Anderson.
That's better than Tampa and Boston. I like their chances, but it won't be easy because playoff hockey is going to be different.
And maybe that's what they're telling them, that, hey, we've got this guy, we love him, and you better show us that you can go to the next level. I think if his stock goes, then they still could be in a position, Mac, at the last second if they're comfortable enough with Jack to flip Freddie for a defenseman.
Yeah, that's fair. And there's a few teams. There's one in Edmonton could definitely use him.
All right. Before we move off of that game,
I'm not sure what defenseman you're getting back from Edmonton.
Well, that's where you involve three teams, Mac.
That's right. Exactly.
Okay. That's the way that works. Freddie can still end up in Edmonton, but he's gonna have to pull a defenseman off of another team.
Right.
So, before we leave that game, just of course no Patrick Laine, and that's a shame because he was by far the best player in game one for Winnipeg. But a little disappointed, Mac.
I'm glad you decided against trading him.
Yeah. A little disappointed, I think, in Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. And those two guys have to go up against the Matthews and the Marners and at least go head-to-head. But those two guys had a real off night.
Yeah, they didn't play. You know, Scheifele had the great chance to score in the first period in the slot there. That was a chance to get a lead and maybe turn the game around a little bit. But the way they played the second period, to see that team outshot 19-1 at a point in the second period, you don't see that from the Jets. But look, I thought their first period was okay. They held their own. They stayed in it. Second period, a disaster, and third period, battled back a little bit. But shorthanded, Line A without Line A in the power play, big difference. So that's how important big players are.
Yeah, and I think Hellebuyck showed that all the attention that he got last season was no fluke.
No, he held
them in there.
I've got him as the main reason they make the playoffs. I know their defense isn't good enough, but I think Hellebuyck gets them in.
All right. Any other topic of conversations? Because we certainly went in deep with Edmonton and Vancouver with good reason. Certainly concern. We won't panic, but concern.
No panic, but I tell you what, we've talked panic for years in Montreal, and all of a sudden, and you mentioned this morning, we were talking, Jake Allen comes
in. Yeah, we got to give Montreal some love here.
We got to give Montreal some love, and Anderson and Toffoli and company, and Suzuki looks terrific. Kotkaniemi looks good. I mean, Romanoff has been a horse. There's a lot of positives in Montreal right now.
Yeah, and they're smart enough too, Mac, to know that they have to win from the net out. And the first guy is Carey Price, and I'm sure Mark Bergevin presented him an opportunity to go a guy like Jake Allen, and he gave it the green light. I mean, I don't think you bring Jake Allen in without discussing it with Carey Price, right?
Guaranteed, 100%.
So,
and I mean, Allen might be the perfect guy for Carey Price, you know, because there's never really been a legitimate backup there since Rogge Vanshaw.
Wow. There's a blast from the past. Hey, were you saving that one?
I was saving that one. Rogge Vanshaw is their last competent backup.
Okay. What's going on with your Boston Bruins, Mac? They can't score 5-on-5.
They haven't scored a 5-on-5 goal. They have not scored a 5-on-5 goal. And you know what? I tell you, you lose two of your top four blue liners.
Well,
like Krug generated a lot of offense, and even Charik, it's not good.
I don't know
Pasternak,
if they
got to get Pasternak back.
I don't know how much they realized how much depth Torrey Krug gave those guys.
You want to believe it? I mean, missing him on the power play. I'm sure I like Grizzlick, but he's no Torrey Krug.
Oh my gosh! So every time you watched Boston with Krug on that power play, he utilized every piece in the offensive zone. There wasn't a piece of ice that he wouldn't eventually touch.
And
over the course of a week or two on a power play, he was that creative.
And 5'9" and that tough. This kid was tough. Big loss. Pasternak's got to get back, but I you know what? It's not good right now. But anyway,
how big was Columbus's win over Detroit, Mac, and Dubois getting his goal?
Well, you like to see Dubois get score so it can cause more grief. It's every intermission. NBC yesterday, nobody wants to play in Columbus. It's such BS. They're hard on Columbus. I don't like it one bit. But Torch stirred it up. He didn't have to. And
there is a bit of a parade.
They're good. They were dominated by.
There is a bit of a parade. There is a bit of a parade to leave Columbus, Mac. I don't know if you've noticed, but guys come in, guys want to leave. I mean, it has to be addressed, Mac, internally.
You know what? I'm through worrying about what's going on in Columbus.
As long as Rick Nash didn't want to leave, you're okay.
That's all that mattered. And he didn't want to when I was there. So that's fine. They'll have to figure it out. And I wouldn't hold it against him because Bobrovsky and Panarin don't want to be there, but you don't like to see a kid. And somebody mentioned it to me last night, when's the last time a kid in his third year pro, is demanding to be out of a place when he just got $10 million? You don't see this very often.
No.
So we'll see. It's got to get fixed.
All right. Nine games on tap tonight, Mac, but we lose Nashville and Carolina.
That's good. That's COVID. A good thing. That's a good, it's not a good thing because of COVID, but one less game to flip through tonight wouldn't be bad.
Where are you off to?
I'm on to Delray right now. I'm teeing up at 1:30 at Delray Dunes. I'm ready.
You told me, get me out of here at 10-1 Eastern. I kept my word.
Just a minute. Where are you going? Just a minute. I just want to show you the message from Jill. I'm going to the car. See you later.
Doug McClain from sunny Florida while we freeze our asses off anywhere north of that. All right, Doug, good luck in your match today.
Thanks, bud.
Okay. Wear mask golfing, by the way. All right, everybody, that's it for episode 67. Once again, if you're a first-time viewer, hit the subscribe button, hit the like button, let us know how you feel, leave some comments, and we'll pick it up. Look, I'm all scratchy from yelling at Doug. Have a great day, everybody, and we'll see you soon.